and welcome to the Untitled Female Driven Podcast. The three of us are film and TV writers, and we're here to talk about how to make it as professional writers in the entertainment industry. So we talk about in this podcast what we wish we had known when we were first getting started. We want to help you guys learn the easy way, what we had to learn the hard way. I'm Erica Schreiber. I mostly write features.
I'm Jess Cho. I mostly write for television.
And I'm Hannah Rosner. I also mostly write for television. And today we are talking about red flags. And it's funny because I think saying this podcast covers what we wish we'd know when we were getting started, this episode is definitely going to majorly encompass things we wish we had known before we took our first jobs or before we even set out in the industry, sort of what to avoid.
Things that we put up with that we look back and we're like, oh, we probably shouldn't have put up with that. Or we wish we hadn't put up with that.
Did you guys all read that Daily Beast article that came out in like July about the issues that were being brought up, especially on Twitter? People were using the IA Solidarity or Pay Up Hollywood. Like a lot of those hashtags that were starting to go around were allowing a lot of people to feel like they could open up about their experience. People were seeing other people opening up and sharing their stories, and it was destigmatizing, you know, people being able to talk about difficult things that had happened in their careers, where if they had talked about it before, they would have been worried that they'd be blacklisted or they wouldn't be able to work again, or it would hurt their reputation. And then when more and more people started speaking out, it became more acceptable and cathartic, but also can be really painful and triggering for people to read these. So I think personally, when I read the Daily Beast article, reading it, I was like, wow, this is totally bringing up a lot of red flags, things that I have experienced in my own life when I was an assistant or just my first few jobs in the industry, and seeing how many people have also put up with these things and just looking at it and being like, I wish that I had known that other people were going through this and that other people were saying this is not okay, because there's a lot of gaslighting in this industry of just rhetoric of, well, you just gotta hustle and keep your nose to the grindstone and don't complain. And, you know, eventually you'll find success if you just put up with like toxic work environments and various forms of abuse, and you don't have to. So we're here to help cover what are the red flags and the yellow flags and ways to maybe figure out how can you avoid making some choices or decisions that can help you have hopefully a better life as a creative person.
Hear, hear. Something I've noticed is that, you know, so a lot of people have gone through difficult / abusive times as assistants, and then they get promoted and they become bosses, right? And you can really separate bosses into two camps. Camp one is, I had to go through hell, and so I'm going to make sure that my assistant doesn't. And camp two is, I had to go through hell, and I'm going to make sure my assistant does the same thing. That's how I learned. That's how I got to where I am. That's what it's got to be.
We're going to kind of start from the bottom up, I guess, in terms of, you know, starting with looking for an entry-level job. You want to be an assistant. You want to be maybe an assistant in an agency or a writer's assistant, director's assistant, producer's assistant, what have you, executive assistant. And I find, speaking of, you know, working for people who maybe were treated really badly by their previous boss and then have become a boss, and now what do they act like? Are they in camp one or camp two? And I would say one of the biggest red flags or ways to know just from the job posting what you're in for is if they say must have a thick skin.
Mm-hmm. Yes. If they say you must have a thick skin, what they're saying is, I would like your permission to throw a stapler at your head.
Yes.
It's basically saying this boss is an asshole. And it's important to know, I'd say for all these red flags that we're covering, you can totally choose. If you are like, yeah, I've got a thick skin, like I can handle the most nightmare monster boss and I don't care because I think it will still help me get where I want to go. God bless you. Like, go for it. I don't have a thick skin. And I feel like I've had metaphorical staplers thrown at me enough that I'm like, well, eventually I'll have a thick skin, right? And if that's just not what you want, then maybe avoid taking that job.
Basically, like, you know, we're not here to tell you what to do and what not to do. If you want to give that a try, sure. But just know that's what you're in for. If the job listing says you should have thick skin, then you should know that the person that you're working for is going to be anywhere from very difficult to downright abusive, and that they don't want you to apply for this if you don't think you can handle that.
Yeah. And another thing I think I used to see a lot when I would look at job postings for an assistant job is, you know, must be willing to juggle personal and administrative work. If you want to work for like Chris Nolan and you don't care if you're picking up his dog and his dry cleaning, you just want to be around him, like, awesome. If it says it's, you know, there's going to be some personal work, there's going to be a lot of personal work. If all you want is to be in the office and being able to be around the creative part of the job, ask if there's personal work, because you just need to know what you're in for.
A lot of times they'll play it down, but I promise if it says anything about personal work, you are going to be picking someone's dry cleaning up during rush hour.
You're going to be Andy in The Devil Wears Prada when Meryl Streep was like, the twins need like scuba diving gear and the new Harry Potter book. That'll be you.
That's you. Yeah, sometimes that's a second assistant job. Sometimes if someone's so busy and important, they have more than one assistant. Like the first assistant is probably the job you want, and the second assistant is the job that you will hate yourself for. Or you might not. We're talking about if you want a job as an assistant where you can learn from someone how to be in development, how to do production, they're looking for someone to pick up their dry cleaning, if this is what you see in the listing.
A lot of entry-level jobs are personal assistant jobs. That's just par for the course. You can, again, it's up to you if you want to do that, or if you think you can skip that, you can. It just might be a little more difficult. But I'd say the reason that it's really a red flag is because if you become someone's personal assistant, you can get really intertwined in their life to the point that they are now dependent on you. They need you. You're the only person who knows, you know, all of their DirecTV password, and they may not want to promote you because they need you to do that stuff. They are not capable of doing it on their own anymore because they're too busy, or they just literally don't know how anymore. And you just want to know, like, going in, the chance that they're going to give you a chance and promote you because you're working so hard and doing such a good job as their personal assistant. Yeah, let me tell you, they're not going to want to let you go.
Yeah, that's real. So another job posting red flag for me, and this is something you can check really easily, sometimes the same listing pops up over and over again. You know, like you'll see a job listing for an assistant and then it'll disappear. And then a month or two later, the exact same listing showed up. Do you know what that means? That means they fired someone and they're looking for it again. And there are companies who I have seen them doing this over and over again. Every 2 months, that listing pops up again. If it happens once, shame on them. If it happens twice, shame on you. I'm basically saying is, if they can't keep an assistant, the assistant's not the problem. It's them. One of the most famous examples of this is how I used to see listings for jobs on Ellen DeGeneres' show, because people would burn out super fast. And that's all become public. The way that the producers treated people was unacceptable. But that I knew that before it came out, simply because I would always see listings for Ellen. And you're like, that's a place where people should want to work. Turns out, no.
That's such a good tip. I would never thought of it that way, but
yeah,
I remember
Google
seeing,
it when you see a listing. If you know who the company is, see if they've been looking for an assistant multiple times in a year.
Yeah. So I guess that would lead right into, I want to talk a little bit about sort of homework that you can do on your own about the job and about the boss in question before the interview stage and before you even like maybe apply for it. Google them. Google the company, Google the boss. And if there's any stories about them that have made their way to the internet, then big time red flag.
Big yikes.
Yeah. if they said something on Twitter, if people talk about them on Twitter, yeah, then you know, maybe not. Also asking around, asking friends. And like, for example, if you want to be an assistant to a high profile writer, if you can find out who their previous assistant was or the person who's leaving, if that the person who's leaving is the person that posted about the job, you can Google their name and see, okay, how long have they worked for this person? It's just information gathering. It's not necessarily a red flag, but you know, if they worked for the same person for like 5 years and never got promoted, then that's a red flag because you know there might not be upward mobility. Asking around in terms of, this goes for any job, staffing, writing gigs, whatever, asking about if you know somebody that worked for this company or worked with this company, how was that experience? What have you heard? Just try to subtly gather some info so you kind of know a little bit more about what you're in for. And then when it comes to an interview, there's certain things that the person interviewing you will ask you about that you can know is a potential yellow or red flag. And so one of those things is asking about your personal life.
Yeah, I believe it's illegal. But yeah, are they asking if you're married? Are they asking if you have kids? Are they asking if you're planning to have kids? Even where do you live is a little wonky, although I could see that because it's a town where it's hard to get to places. And if you're hiring someone in Mar Vista and they live in Highland Park, you might wonder if they would be as accessible as you hoped, but like, it's still kind of iffy. If they discuss any like financial stuff with you, and I don't mean salary requirements or anything like that, but like, just know.
That's a big red flag, because what that probably means, are you okay getting paid basically nothing? Because can you afford to live?
Like, how wealthy are your parents? And you're just like, oh, super wealthy. They're like, great, we don't have to pay you. Or my parents are not super wealthy. They're like, well, then we don't want you because then we'd have to pay you. You know, so either way, it's weird. It's weird. I'll also say, like, how do you feel when you walk into the interview? I had a really uncomfortable interview with someone who, like, considered the fact that this is them trying to make a good impression, right? Or it should be. So if someone walks in and they're wearing, like, really shitty clothes, like they couldn't be bothered to change from the gym or whatever, and they don't speak to you in a way that makes you feel like, you know, a real person, that's not going to get better. Sure, someone might be having a bad day, but even someone with a bad day is going to show up in your job life. Do they make you feel like you're the 20th person they've interviewed? In which case you probably are. And that's not a good sign either, that they're so picky that they're just running through these applicants hoping for, I don't know, some kind of miracle. It's not clear what they're looking for when they do that. If they ask dumb questions like, are you an actor? I got asked that in an interview once. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? You know, are you going to leave as soon as you sell a script? If they make you feel bad about, you know, your hopes and dreams, pay attention to this. You know, even if it's not even someone who would be your direct boss, it's speaking towards the culture of the company.
Also, if someone asks you your opinion, they give their opinion on a subject and then they ask you your opinion. If you, for example, disagree with them, which is something I did once, and the person who was interviewing me got very upset.
Red flag.
That's probably not a good place to be.
Yeah. If they make like sexist or racist comments in the interview, so that's happened to me, right? I got a really sexist comment and I heard a friend put me up for the job and she's like, oh yeah, that's just his way of testing if, you know, you're going to be like a narc or whatever. Like, red flag.
This is about job postings, but on the same line, if they ask you, if you send a resume and they ask for your headshot, nope. They want to know what you look like. Also, just, I'm sorry, guys, you got to set all your social media to private. People Google you and they're going to look at your Facebook and they're going to look at, like, don't have anything up that you don't want people to see. But if you are like me and I only post to my friends on Instagram, so my Instagram is private.
When you're asking questions about what they expect of you, you know, like if they're very blatant about like, look, we're going to need you to be on call on weekends and stuff like that. Again, we can't make this decision for you, but just know if that's brought up in the interview that they expect you to work after hours during the weekend, just know they're really going to expect you to do that.
It's very important that people know that it's okay to ask, is there going to be a lot of work on weekends and after hours? Because you have a life and you need to plan your life. And if they at least are upfront about it, now you know what you're dealing with, but it's okay to ask if they don't offer that information up.
And also always just check in with their tone. Like if you ask questions, for example, be like, am I expected to work on weekends or after hours? If they get defensive or aggressive about it, they're not going to be fun to work for.
I think with all of this across the board, I think the thing to remember is you go into an interview. Usually when you go into an interview, you're so focused on you making the right impression and you seeming hireable and great. And all of that is so important. But it's easy to forget that this is also potentially years of your life that you're signing up for, and you just got to know your worth. So just keep in mind that if you go in and then you sort of come away from it feeling like, I didn't get a good vibe, or I just don't think that person would be good to work for, it can be disappointing, but trust me, it's worth it to not take a job that could potentially be years of suffering.
Well, I wanted to ask you guys, this kind of counts for writer assistant or showrunner assistant interviews, but what about like staffing meetings as a writer? If you're in with the showrunner or the producer, is like, what are some red flags that they might ask you?
One red flag that I got asked was, how do you think the show ends? And then I remember countering it. We're like, oh, well, you know, I think it depends on like the tone that you want to set and the directions that you want to go. And I basically turned the question to him, basically, what tone or direction are you setting here? And he said, I'll know it when I see it.
Whoa. Okay.
That's a red flag.
When you first said they asked you, where do you see the show ending? I was like, is that a red flag? Like, that's actually kind of an interesting question. They shouldn't really be asking you to pitch, but I know we've talked about this before. That's a whole other thing. But if they're asking you for an idea, then it can lead to like a fun conversation of like, oh, I see this, you know, maybe like you do want that opportunity to pitch. But now that I'm seeing the part two of that, which is very clearly the reason they were asking that is they don't know. That's a huge red flag.
That's an indication the showrunner has no idea what the fuck they're doing. So yeah, big red flag.
Any indication that you get that the creator is not decisive, that's going to be a problem. Your life is going to be hell for as long as you're in that writer's room.
That's going to be a writer's room that goes to like 9 or 10 every night.
Again, we were talking about behavior during an interview. And if the showrunner or creator or producer that you're meeting with in a staffing meeting is just like on their phone, like while they're talking to you, like, you know, checking their texts or just generally distracted, you're like, okay, well, obviously you're just not engaged. And yes, people are busy, but if somebody, it's better for somebody to give you 5 minutes of their undivided attention than 45 minutes of being totally distracted. That's just such a weird vibe and like a weird power move. Like, oh, I don't have time to like get to know you. So that's kind of a red flag. And then also like you guys were saying about saying racist or sexist or homophobic or any of that, then run for the hills. But if they're like checking you out or like doing the once over or like kind of being flirtatious or like, yeah, run for the hills.
Yeah.
And then some other things that I have not experienced firsthand, but have heard is showrunners who ask you to talk shit about, like, are digging for gossip about previous shows that you worked on. I'd say that's kind of a red flag because that means that they're going to be, they might talk shit about you. They might talk shit about other writers. And it's just going to be like a catty, gossipy environment. And it, okay, if you thrive on that, cool. I personally hate gossip and I just don't like the idea of feeling like two people are going to be talking in any moment. The person who they're talking about can walk by. That just makes for a very uncomfortable, not healthy work environment. So try to avoid that. I think it's similar, but like if they're shit talking writers that used to work on the show, that's just not cool. They shouldn't be doing that. It's very unprofessional. You haven't even been hired yet and they're like talking about somebody that didn't make it. And especially if they're naming names, but even if they're just like, oh, we had a writer who did this and that, and whatever they're complaining about really isn't
that bad.
Yeah, that bad. It's like, do I want to potentially work with somebody that would speak about me this way? You want somebody that's going to sing your praises when you get your next job and isn't going to be mad at you for like succeeding beyond their show.
Writers' rooms and honestly this industry in general is full of very creative, neurotic people who seem very insistent on just recreating a Mean Girls high school atmosphere wherever they go. And just know that some people can thrive in that atmosphere. You know, some people don't mind playing the politics. They have a strategy. They're good at that sort of weird social dynamic, and that's fine. And if you're not one of those people, then you might be better off trying to find a healthier room where people are professionals, where people are like, okay, we'll go home at like 5 o'clock every day. We won't talk about other people in the room. It's not just the environment that you think you can survive. It's the environment that will help you thrive. Because the other thing is like those Mean Girls sort of shenanigans, that has a toll on your mental health. The more you're steeped in that toxicity, it is going to have effects on you, and it might hit you at times when you don't even know it. You don't know how it's going to shape you as a person.
Like you said, it's not just you just have to survive this room and then move on with your life. It can stay with you in a way that affects your creative process and affects your career. If you work for someone who they shoot down every single idea that you have, but then they end up using it in their script or something, you're like, wow. So not only did you use my ideas without giving me any sort of credit, you actually made me feel like I don't know what I'm doing. And that's going to make me just less confident. And you have to be confident when you're pitching and when you're breaking story. So if you get a vibe from somebody in an interview that they are not the kind of person that's, it's not their job to make you feel good about yourself, but if they're really actually like expending their energy, you know, putting you down or making you feel like you don't deserve to be there. Like we all have enough imposter syndrome as it is. We don't need to be working for someone that makes you feel like you're not good and you don't know what you're doing. So if you get that impression in the interview, you can bet that that's going to be the energy that you have every day going to work.
So that makes sense for showrunner questions for staffing meetings. On the feature side, we have some pretty specific red flags. And let's talk about going up for an open writing assignment, because that's most of the jobs in the feature world. And potential red flag number one is who is this person / company? Are they legit? And if you have a rep, then they'll probably not send you to someone who is not legit. But, you know, they also might. And if you're on your own and you're getting a meeting, like definitely Google. check IMDb. If you can, if you have someone who can check Studio System or IMDb Pro, just ask around. If you haven't heard of this company, there's a couple reasons for that. You know, there's a couple innocuous reasons, like maybe they used to be somewhere else and they're starting a new company, you know, or something like that. But if you haven't heard of them, a lot of times that's not a great sign. So you want to look into, what have they made? Who are they? They'll, you know, like, are they talking like they're a huge producer, but they have like one short film on their resume? Check that first, right? The next thing I would say is, if you're hearing about this open writing assignment from a lower level exec, the pro to that is that a lower level exec is hungrier and they're going to work really hard, and that's great. But the real question is, does their boss know this project exists? Is this there is something they're excited about, but that no one else at the company knows about? And so you're going to have a really, really rough road ahead. That's important. It's like, who's excited about this? Who knows about it? Like, where is it? And this is something that's honestly probably easier for your reps to get an answer about, but you can do a little investigative something in the meeting. Some other important questions is, how long have they had this project, right? If it's a book, if it's a book, do they actually have the rights to this book? 500% double check that. Even if they say, oh yeah, totally, we do. I have just known too many writers to go down this road of heartbreak to put together a pitch and work their asses off and even maybe get hired, only to find that whoever they're talking to doesn't actually have the rights to the thing.
How do you find that out?
You can do a rights check. Even if you don't have access to I think it's very expensive to have access to the rights check system. Little detective work on your own. Call the writer's agent and ask if the rights are available. And then if they say no, be like, I'm meeting with this company about it. Is that correct? Right? Sometimes it's somewhere else. So yes, so that can be your kind of Nancy Drew Hardy Boy investigation. So yes, so how long have they had this project? Have they had this project for like 3 years and they just bring this up at general meetings to see? It's like Jess is sure in a meeting, like, I'll know when I see it. Like, do they not have a strong vision for this project? And that's why they've had it for so long. Like, we'll know when we hear it. It is rarely helpful to you. It's mostly like, it's almost certainly going to be a waste of your time. Next question I would have would be, how many writers have actually worked on this project? You may not be the first writer they've hired. You may not be the 16th writer they've hired, or not even hired, but like brought on board to work on this for free. So that's an important question, because if it's 15 other writers, run far. And then the last question I would have is, if they're bringing this up to you in a general meeting, it's because they should be actively looking for pitches on this. So the next question is, how many writers are actually pitching on this project? Are they bringing it up at every single general meeting? Are you in a bake-off, which is when many, many writers pitch on the same project? And a lot of times they end up choosing no one, because it costs them nothing to hear takes from as many writers as they can.
I have questions, follow-up questions, which one is, okay, if there's like 15 other writers, you know, what do you think is sort of the zone, the safe zone of how many other writers? Because there's definitely going to be, you're not the only person, right, that's usually pitching.
To pitch on it or to work on it?
Both. So to pitch on something, how many writers would you say is like, okay, that's like a healthy amount. And then what's the line between?
When does it become a bake-off?
Yeah.
Ideally, it's just a couple people, because they're only bringing it to the people who are really right for it. And when I say a couple, I mean like two or three. If you hear five or six, that's a little, you know, like that kind of means you have a 1 in 6 chance. And if one of those writers is like, say, Eric Heiserer, then they're just doing this for fun, you know?
Yeah.
But Bake Off, I think, is anything more than that. You know, you have like 7 writers pitching on the same project. That's like too many. And if it's an ongoing thing, if they've had this project for 3 years and they're listening to takes as they come in, that's still really bad. Because I mean, they've heard like 100 takes on this project.
Is there a way to find out if like, say there's only, okay, so you find out there's only 2 or 3, but those other two that are not you are like, yeah, Eric Heiserer and like some, where you're just like, is there a way to find out, I'm pitching against somebody way higher level than me, so I'm probably not going to get this?
If you are unrepped, then you kind of have to ask, like, are any of them really high level writers? And you don't need to know it's Eric Heiserer, but if they say, yeah, one of them is like pretty high level, then you'll know. The other, your rep is more likely to get a good answer on that, but you can still ask, and you should still ask regardless. But yes, your rep should be like, who do you have pitching on this? Are there any really high level writers? You know, like, who is my client up against? And, or conversely, who am I up against? You could also be like, hit the ballsy question, be like, so why do you want to hear from me on this?
Yeah.
Like, I've just thought of this question. Now I kind of want to ask it sometime.
Well, I think the takeaway here is that, like, we're saying it's appropriate to ask questions that are about the question behind the question here. If you listen to our previous episode, you know, the note behind the note, the question behind the question there is really, Like, is this worth my time? Are you guys invested? Because I'm down. Like, I'm ready to like take this thing and run with it. But if this is going to be 2 months of unpaid work that I have absolutely no chance, I'd like to know. So don't say it like that. But that's the question behind the question.
But here's the final red flag on this situation. Are they weird about you asking questions? Are they uncomfortable with you asking any of these incredibly reasonable questions? And I did like a think tank for film writers at the WGA. And one of the things we talked about that I really loved is that these kinds of things should come with a project sheet. Like, you should just get that, right? Like, if they're like, hey, come here and interview on Three Little Pigs in Space, it should come with an info sheet on it. Like, we've had this project for 1 year. It is currently at this level. You know, like, just to really make these companies think before they put this on you. You know, like, if you are like a CE and you want to have a slam dunk project, that's awesome. Good for you. I want you to do that. But I don't want you to spend a writer's time on a project that your boss doesn't know about. Because what do you think is going to happen there? Unless you bring in Eric Heiserer, your boss is going to be like, I have my own projects. What are you talking about?
Does anyone have any other red flags that we didn't mention?
One small red flag. It was in a feature meeting I did. I once had a meeting with several execs who all worked for the same team. They hated each other. It was obvious. Like, they kept interrupting each other. I could just see their faces getting madder and madder at each other. For that reason alone, it was a cool project, but I passed because I was like, if they hate each other, it's not going to bode well for me in the writing of it. They will always have differing ideas on what this project should be. There's just no unity here. I'm not dealing with that.
Another red flag that I thought of is, it's fine. People talk politics in writers' rooms, and writers' rooms are generally quite liberal, I'd say. And if you just don't want to talk about politics, you want to stay out of it, that's your right. You can totally do that. But a red flag I think to look out for is if a showrunner or somebody that you're interviewing with is just like spouting their politics just egregiously without really any regard for how you feel about it. If somebody brings up their political affiliations and like how they feel about Black Lives Matter or how they feel about vaccines, like in the first 2 minutes of you meeting them, you can bet that's going to be something that they talk about a lot. And that's, you know, might be problematic for you.
Oh, one more thing I thought of for a writer's room is, what is the makeup of that writer's room? Is everyone high level a cis straight white dude? That, and are you interviewing for a lower level position? And this is season three, and every year they hire a new woman.
Are you going to be the only woman in the room? Are you going to be the only person of color in the room? You can figure out pretty easily, I think, if they're just trying to, they're going to make you the person that talks about all the issues of the person of your gender or color or sexuality.
Again, it's always up to you what you want to do with your career. It's your career. And if you want to do a year at a place where you need a thick skin and need to dodge staplers thrown in your head, like, go for it. There's no judgments. It's a really difficult industry to navigate and break into. And we're just helping you be aware before you take that job of, you know, the red flags that you are seeing and choosing to live with. Or if you have, you know, the ability to not take those jobs. That's our episode. Please follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @untitledfemale. You can talk to us there, or you can email us at untitledfemaledrivenpodcast@gmail.com. We've gotten some really sweet notes from you guys, and we really appreciate it. Like, honestly, it makes our day. It would also make our day if you were to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And we want to hear what you guys want to hear us talk about. Take care, and we'll see you next time.
Bye. Bye.